great unfurls its splendor. Grasp it, sense it, tremulous and tender. Turn your face away from the garish light of day. Turn your thoughts away from cold, unfeeling light. And listen to the music.
It's a privilege to have the opportunity to speak with you this morning. I have been looking at all the amazing career that you have had, both on the stage and on the screen, and the fact that I'm having the opportunity to speak with you right now is really exciting.
Well, I'm excited. Thank you. That's very sweet.
Well, you're a nominee for the Emmys, the Tonys, the SAG Awards, and you recently starred in Spike Lee's critically acclaimed Five Bloods. And in the groundbreaking FX series Pose, I was looking at some of your video extractions from your website, and I was just loving Scandal and Daytime Divas, and it just looks like so much fun.
So, yeah, I've been very blessed.
Exactly. And we are very excited to have you here as part of the Three Rivers Young People's Concerts, the TRIPO Concert, and you'll be the honored guest. And do you know Brian Wardsdale, who is the music director and conductor? How did this come to be?
That's a great question. I think I've met... Forgive me if Brian reads this and we've met and we're best friends, but I think I met Brian before. I got associated through Stephen Reinecke and the New York Pops. And so this was part of kind of their kind of outreach or something like that. It's kind of like a branch of the New York Pops. And so we just stayed in touch over the years. We were supposed to do something back in 2020, I think. And then, you know,
before the world ended.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. So, well, we're lucky to have you here. They're celebrating 50 years of the TRIPO, the Three Rivers Young People's Orchestras. And I guess will we have the opportunity to hear you sing on that concert?
I think so. Oh. I think that's part of it. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. I just wanted to make sure because you were the first African-American Phantom. That can also be seen on your website. And, of course, Porgy and Porgy and Bess. And so many things, the Sweeney Todd, the Demon Barber of Fleet Street, all of my favorites.
I know, right? What about that? Yeah,
exactly.
Me too. I like those guys, too.
And I have to tell you, I so fell in love with the live Jesus Christ Superstar where you were Caiaphas with John Legend as Jesus. Oh, my goodness. That must have been amazing.
Yeah. It was, and, you know, now it's, 2018, it seems like a lifetime ago, and then it seems like yesterday, but it was an amalgam of a great event, if you will. It was a concert slash musical slash TV, special event. It was just, David Laveau, who was our director, has done really well in the theatrical world and also in film, and so melding those two skills together, I think it just worked. You know, it was one of the best things that they did on live TV.
It really was one of the, I still get chills thinking about it because it was just so beautifully filmed and the fact that it was all live. How long did it take to put that together?
Well, because I didn't have as much as the ensemble did, I came in a little later, but they had been rehearsing about a month before I got there.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting is watching, there was a mock, they were doing all the choreography and the staging, but there was a mock camera.
Mm-hmm.
So there would be a cameraman, but he didn't have a real camera. He just kind of would have something that just would be like, okay, David would say, I want you to move here. I want this angle. I want that angle. And just, we tried all sorts of things. So it was about 2 months before we actually did the production because it was live.
Mm-hmm.
And in front of, you know, we're all used to that as theater professionals. But when it's in front of a camera, in front of millions and millions of people,
right.
It gets a little intimidating. So what we ended up doing is that we actually, just in case, we did a dress rehearsal the night before. and did in case something went wrong, in case someone got sick or whatever the case may be. So we had one in the can, and then we actually did the live one.
Mm-hmm. When you were a young man or a youngster, how did you discover that you had this beautiful voice?
Well, I didn't know that until I was like a junior in my high school. I played tennis growing up, so singing was not necessarily at the forefront. I did sing in church, but it was basically kind of a rite of passage. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, my dad was very high in the church. He was a deacon, and my grandfather was a preacher. So it was kind of like what you did. Like the rest of my family, the rest of my friends, my community went to this church, and it's just something that you did, whether you could sing or not. You just joined the choir or did church activities. And so that was what my entrance into this world was. Then finally, in my high school, I know that you had to have so many credits in electives to graduate. So I did not want to do home economics, which is what they put me in. And then I went to the chorus. I said, oh, I sing in church. Why not try in school? And that's what happened. And that's when I had my aha moment.
Did you end up going to college for acting or singing or both of those? Or how did that happen?
No. So I went to a junior college in Lake City, Florida. And I studied, you know, I got my core classes, but I studied business. And then I took some classes at a school called Rollins College.
Okay. And
And again, I didn't major in business at all. I majored, major in music or theater. I majored in business.
Right. So then how did it veer off into the theater? Because you've had an extensive career.
Well, I stayed close to it. I was in the choir of these schools, and I did a couple of plays here and there when I had time. And after leaving school, I ended up going to work for a newspaper. I worked in for the Orlando Sentinel. I worked in advertising. During the day, I would work there, but at night, I would go and sing at bars and contests and things like that. And that's how I got propelled into this. I literally was just going along, having fun. It was kind of like karaoke, but it was you could win money. And so I won some money. I lost, but I won some trips to New York and I think the Caribbean or something. And from that, someone saw me at one of the contests, and he was a producer for a cruise ship. And he came up to me afterwards and said, I need someone like you in my show. Would you be willing to do that? And I had to stop and think, because I was like, you know, I had not really seriously thought about it. I'm taking you down a whole nother path. But because I lived in Orlando, I did audition for Disney. Because people kept telling me, oh, my God, you should try for Disney. They have great benefits and things like that. And I auditioned, and I would get called back, but I never got the job. So I did 7 times I would audition, and just never, they didn't see anything in me. So, they didn't hire me. But I think it's a blessing, though, because I think the universe, God, whoever you believe in, saves you from certain things. And had I done the Disney route, I probably still would be there.
Exactly. Right. Instead of having the profound effect that you've had on off-Broadway and Broadway and all of the things that you have done. And also, you are a founding member of Black Theater United, which is an organization which stands together to help protect Black people, Black talent, and Black lives of all shapes and orientations in theater and communities across the country. This is so important these days. How did you decide that this is something you needed to start?
Well, you know, 2020, again, was that strange year. And, you know, it was not only with the pandemic, but it was also, you know, there was a lot of murders going on and of Black people. And so at that moment, people felt, especially because we were shut in, people were feeling a certain way about it. And especially the younger people. And so it started, people kind of felt that they could share their anger, no matter what genre they were in, and specifically in the theatrical world. And so we saw this, and we were frustrated. We were like, we don't know what our voice is. So we came together. LaChance and Audra McDonald called each other, had a long talk, and then they called their friends. And me, thank God, I was part of that.
Yeah, friendship. Exactly. Sure.
And we had a Zoom, and literally that Zoom lasted about 4 or 5 hours. And we just were like, what do we do? What do we do? What do we say? Because we have connections and relationships with people who are, you know, pretty prominent in the theater owners and producers. So we wanted to, instead of showing anger, show frustration and have a conversation and welcome a conversation with these people.
Right.
So we decided to create a Black Theater United. And in the, probably I would say the 6 months of trying to put everything together, we finally got people who wanted to have conversations with us. And so we decided to have a summit, and that took another 6 months. And basically it was the theater owners, the producers, the creatives, the heads of unions, you know, anybody else that was dealing with theater. We had a summit, and then we broke out in different rooms of whatever, you know, you were representing. And we had really, really in-depth conversations. And we said, be as candid as you want. Let us know what you are feeling, and then we will let you know what we are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it just kind of went from there, and we created the New Deal. For the most part, all of those people signed on to it. Not everybody signed everything, but it's not the Constitution of the United States, but it is something that is keeping people accountable of what is happening. And we wanted to show the inconsistencies of what is going on in this industry and maybe do something about it.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And, you know, the industry at this point is challenged because of just people not getting out there as much as they used to also.
Right, right. There's that. There's also, you know, we also wanted a seat at the table because, you know, there's sometimes where there's, like, for instance, there's a new Louis Armstrong piece that's coming to Broadway, and the only Black producer that is on it is Vanessa Williams. And with that, she has been able to put some insight into the legitimacy and the authenticity of certain scenes and certain things and dialogue and stuff like that. So there are moments, not just for Black theater, but there are moments that sometimes you need to hear from a perspective of someone who has lived that sort of situation.
Right.
And so that's what we're doing. And we also are trying to open up doors instead of just on stage. You know, there's a lot of great things happening, especially with Hamilton and people being diverse and all that stuff. On stage is the trajectory is doing
it's
well.
On track, yeah.
Could be better, but it's doing well.
Right.
It's on track. But backstage, there's not a lot of people that we know of color or Black people that we know or backstage, you know, who have the skill sets. You know, I've done a lot of concerts at a lot of orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
And I would see that there might be one or two Black people. And I was like, okay, I don't know what that means. I don't know if people don't know there's an opportunity there. But, you know, we just want to make sure the conversation's open and to be able to, like, I love the fact that I've been able to do the things that I've done and it not be considered a challenge for people to accept. And also Brian Stokes Mitchell and also Audra McDonald and LaChance, we played roles that have previously been played by people who are of a different color than we are.
Mm-hmm.
But once we get into the story, you know, I think that goes away. And so we want that kind of attitude with people in administration. We want people to have that sort of attitude with people who are in the technical field and, you know, that deal who want to still do theater. So that's what our mission is.
Well, the challenge is, I think, getting into the schools when the kids are in high school or whatever and showing them what is out there, what the opportunities are, because I don't think that is usually, you know, backstage and working costumes and makeup and all that kind of wonderful work that has to go on there, that the younger kids are aware of that.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's what we're, you know, right now we have a mentorship program that we have actually It's been very successful. We've even had people get hired from that in the corporations that we place them in for, like, just the intern mentorship sort of situation. It's like, okay, we want to keep you permanently. Mm-hmm. Now we're working on a different component of the education, and you're exactly right. We're trying to hit people as early as the junior high, middle school, and let them know that there are opportunities out there for you.
Well, you know, there, as here in Pittsburgh, we have a huge the Gene Kelly Awards and the whole high school. School competition and musicals is a huge thing here in the springtime, and it would be great to see some of you know, some of the backstage stuff being done by people of a different color. It would be really great. It's happening slowly and sure, but surely. But you know, especially the high school kids are just so rabid about music theater, especially in this town. It's pretty crazy.
Right.
So,
and you know, we still want to keep that enthusiasm with the people on stage as well. But we just want to, like, let people know that there are opportunities.
Right.
Other than if you can't sing, dance, or act, you still can be a part of the theatrical community.
Exactly. I have to ask, do you have a favorite role or a favorite time that you were on, either in the West End or on Broadway, doing a particular role that is always going to be near and dear to your heart?
I love this question. I don't. Funny enough, I am someone who, even though I don't have children, unfortunately, but I look at them as my kids. I've done several shows, and what's been interesting is that even the tiniest role has meant so much to me. I'll give you an example. So I was doing a show off Broadway called Captain's Courageous, based on the novel and the movie that Mickey Rooney was in. And there was a musical of it, and with Treat Williams, God rest his soul. And so I was the only black in the show. And so I was a cook in the show, and we were learning a Massachusetts accent because it was a fishing boat. And, you know, we were trying to get the authentic sound of what they, you know, how they speak. And what was interesting for me, I was like, something feels wrong about this. Like, why am I learning a Massachusetts accent? Cause it's in the turn of the century. And what I found out was doing more research that a lot of those ships would go down to the Caribbean and then come back up, and they would hire people who lived in the Caribbean.
Right.
Ah, and I said, oh, my God, that's it. That's it. That's what is going to get me my subtext. Now, it doesn't matter to the audience. It's just that it's just my subtext. And for that reason, I only had four lines. I literally only had four lines. But it meant so much for me to sing it in a different accent. And to try to bring, you know, honor to whoever was a cook on a fishing boat.
That is amazing. I think people have the perception that we get on stage and it just is there, and you don't think about all of the background and the backstory and where is this character coming from and what are they feeling?
Right.
All that work that goes into creating, you know, a character that sings just four lines.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very cool. I definitely suggest that people go to your website to see some of your beautiful videos. The Phantom of the Opera, when you sit there and float that high note, it's just amazing.
Well, thank you. That's very sweet.
I enjoyed watching that. And, of course, the Jesus Christ Superstar is there. And then some of your TV appearances, Chicago Med and Daytime Divas and Scandal. Some really great, great stuff that you've done throughout the years.
Oh, good. I need to go and check it out myself.
Yeah,
I haven't seen those
you
things.
Should. It's great. It's great. You should you definitely check it out. It's so funny because my career, I have been an opera singer. I'm also on the radio here. But many, many correlations between yours and mine. I was a tennis player, and I found that I played better tennis in front of an audience. And,
wow. Okay.
And so then I went into opera and music theater and all of that kind of stuff. I auditioned for Disney a gazillion times, never made it.
We're each other's alter ego.
We are. It's like, wow, this is really wild. So I look forward to meeting you when you will be here on May 5th for the TRIPO, the Three Rivers Young People's Orchestras. And I can't wait. That's going to be great.
It is. It's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait. I'm always happy to work with young people. And so this is going to be a fun time.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Norm, I really appreciate your taking your time with me this morning. And we look forward to seeing you in May.
Likewise. And maybe we'll play some tennis. Who knows?
Oh, maybe we will. Or maybe we can sing a duet.
Oh, maybe we'll do a duet. There we go.
Either way. All right. Well, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Thank you so much.
Darkness of the music of the night.